Warning, the podcast you are about to hear is often based on true events and people. It chronicles the dialogue and actions of random, anonymous, obnoxious, self-entitled, unintelligent, self-centered idiots, attention whores, ignoramuses, dolts, clods, nimrods, douches, weirdos, drama queens, overly sensitive crybabies, and people who think they are better, more important, and special than the rest of us. In one word, amateurs.
Amateur Nation with Lou Santini. We call attention to and call out the amateurs, the people who are doing life wrong, the speed bumps of life, the people that are in your way every day, the unintelligent, obnoxious, attention-whoring, self-entitled, drama queen victim types who chip away at the moments of your life due to no self-awareness, common sense, manners, or social skills and are disturbing the flow of the pros. Hi, Mom.
Oh, hey, Lou.
Amateur Nation, it's not just a podcast, it's a movement. And welcome to episode 99. I got 99 problems, but the pros ain't dumb. You know, this is our very first episode that we have done on video, and I was going to save it for episode 100, but why wait, okay? So, I want to welcome everyone to the show if it's your first time listening, and welcome to Minimo's Tavern, my bar. For those of you who are joining us for the very first time, welcome, and don't forget to download a copy of my book. Here's a shot of it right here. It's Amateur Nation, The Decline of Common Sense, Manners, and Social Skills. It's available on Amazon for the 45% off reduced price of only $4.99. I think it's coming up on 600 pages, and I reduced that price, and it will stay at 45% off until all the shutdowns are done. That's it. Also, if you have a comment, a question, or a gripe about the show, call the Amateur Nation hotline, 818-351-9263. And of course, you can email me, lou@lousantini.com. Now, last week, I mentioned this quote that I stumbled upon on social media, and I normally hate memes and GIFs and, you know, things to live my life by. Can't stand that crap. But this, there are a few that make sense, and this one was very simple. The more you find yourself, the more friends you'll lose. And I also said on last week's episode, I said I might tag that with, and if you do lose them after you find yourself, they probably weren't your good friends to begin with. Now, many of my fans and followers are commenting that they are indeed losing friends, myself included, both in real life and on social media, maybe people you've never met before. Merely over differences in opinion over what's going on in the country right now regarding the shutdowns, masks, riots, protests, and even more alarming, the bullying, name-calling, and yes, even physical assaults and murders that accompany those things that are happening all around the country as a result. Now, besides calling out my friends and fans, and besides calling out the amateurs, I should say, based on actions only, that's how we operate on this show, actions only, I do not bully my friends and or followers into thinking as I do when it comes to those topics or any of the topics that have been discussed on this show. This is episode 99, coming up on 2 years. I don't bully people into believing like I believe or thinking like I think. I've never blocked, deleted, or unfriended any real-life friend or social media friend just because we don't think alike, unless they get abusive, bullying, condescending, name-calling, etc., once again, based on actions. Now, I assume if you're listening to this show or watching this show today for the first time, we probably have similar lines of thinking when I state my cases, and I do it how I always have, backed by common sense and logic. Sure, I might get emotional and fired up, okay, but logic and common sense are always my guidelines and at the foundation of the book and my podcast, my stand-up comedy. I try to draw parallels to get to the reasoning. I'd like to say that I've never stated an opinion or belief just because I say so, which is the amateur way. We're going to get to that in a minute. The few real-life friends that got pissy, expressed surprise, that was my favorite one. I'm surprised, I'm shocked at my fervor and vocality, so to speak, when it comes to this podcast. That's dumb, first of all, because if you know me, and especially if you know my comedy, you follow my, I've been correctly accused of telling it like it is, okay? And many times with tongue planted firmly in cheek. But when it comes to this podcast, even more so, I tell it like it is. For me, I let it rip. I'm not out to insult your beliefs, your religion, your politics, your social philosophies, your sexual proclivities. I don't care about any of that. If it gets a conversation going, great. If I get some people on my side of common sense and logic, fantastic. But I'm stating on this podcast and in my book, and the listeners of this show, things that are right for me. Pronation, the devoted followers of this show, in hopes that they will be reminded and reassured, as I say in my book description on Amazon, it's not you, it's them. But again, the few real-life friends of mine who acted surprised that I'm so adamant and vocal when it comes to the topics that I discuss here, especially the topics I've been discussing since mid-March, since the pandemic and the riots and all the political unrest, that kind of thing, especially since Amateur Nation has come out in full force since March. Their knee-jerk reactions, which is going to be a topic on this show, there you go, I just tipped my hat, going solely on emotion without even listening to the podcast. This friend of mine literally only heard one 60-second edited, cherry-picked promo preview that they heard. Didn't listen to the whole episode, didn't get any context, and frankly, the 60-second promo, there was nothing in there that's debatable. It was common sense thinking, okay? And you know what? The quote that I talked about last week, that proves my point. Never my friend to begin with. To you. You're surprised at my outspokenness. Okay. Well, my book has been out for over 2 years. The podcast is coming up on 2 years next month in August. And I've been doing comedy for 23 years. But you're surprised at my outspokenness. And yet, as horrible as I am, up to this point, I'm talking to the person that unfriended me, just one of many. Up to this point, when you were shocked at my opinions, I had always treated you with common sense, good manners, and good social skills, not to mention plenty of respect, friendship, laughs, even caring, and to a certain degree, love. So who's the hypocrite here? Who's the bad person? You think because I won't support a communist organization run by a terrorist group that literally does nothing for the black community, that makes me a racist? Do your fucking homework. And after that, look at my track record. You know what? On second thought, don't. Because I owe you no answers. I don't live my life for your approval. Hang on a second. I just need to check a list here. List of people that I live my life for. No, you're not on it. And where's that tolerance that you woke amateurs that have... the tolerance you woke amateurs have been preaching for the last few years. Where'd that go? So I thought, here's what's happening at Amateur Nation. Topic number one. Now, this first topic is about a major characteristic that amateurs have. I talked about it many times in the podcast, on my book, in my book, on the podcast, and that is knee-jerk reactions based solely on emotions. You know what a knee-jerk reaction? It's not like you think about it and. No, knee-jerk, I heard something I don't like, hit the buzzer, and I don't like that. Why? I don't know. That's a knee-jerk reaction, and that's Amateur Nation. Okay, let's get to it. The knee-jerk part, knee-jerk based solely on emotions, the knee-jerk part is really the key. There's no facts behind their emotions and their reactions, no research, no digging, no questioning, just hit the buzzer, I don't like it. Kind of like my former friends who heard a 60-second promo that was cherry-picked from my podcast, and she busted a spring. And now I'm going to give you several more examples. Okay, you know what I noticed? The very first day that Black Lives Matter movement started, I don't mean like what, 7 years ago, I'm talking about in response to George Floyd's horrible, unjustified murder. We can all agree on that. And all the virtue signalers jumped to their social media, instantly changed their thumbnails and profile pictures to the black screen. Just a simple black screen. But now that the riots have happened and hundreds, yes, hundreds of innocent people, including elderly and children and other police officers and even protesters and rioters, have been assaulted and flat out murdered during the riots. And don't forget the lootings and the businesses that have caused many small businesses to go bankrupt with cities under siege, etc. And the world has now done a little bit of homework, thanks to the internet, and see that the Black Lives Matter organization is a socialist organization with communist backing and funded by a terrorist. You don't see those people posting about that stuff as much. I guess their passion just fizzled out. Rather than just say, man, I was really wrong about that one. I believe in the sentiment, you know, and human rights and equality, as I do, of course. But I guess I can't get behind a corrupt organization like that. Rather than post a hashtag and rail against everything that makes America great, maybe I'll concentrate my efforts elsewhere. Maybe I'll stop and look at some of the facts and statistics on crime and racism in America before I get behind the organization that wants to clean house violently without regards to the law-abiding citizens and without regard to the human safety of innocent civilians. That's what they should be thinking and saying, but that would be common sense. Nope, the amateur mindset, yeah, it's just easier to stop posting stuff like that and ignore and or block common sense people and sentiments about being on the right side of justice. Look, there's nothing wrong with being wrong. I was wrong once and I'm fine. I'm sorry, I had to do that. But no, lots of people are wrong every day, me included. I probably was wrong 8 times today already, and I'm recording this at 4 in the afternoon. Here's another example of amateurs and their knee-jerk reactions, fueled solely by emotion with no common sense or logic behind it. Now, this comes from my home state in Ohio, this article from a local affiliate, Fox 8 News. Changes coming to Berea Midpark High School logo after concerns it looks like white power symbol. First of all, I didn't even know we had a white power symbol. I was not aware that we had one. But no, it doesn't look like that. I mean, you can see anything in anything if you look hard enough, but enough of that. That's a knee-jerk reaction. The article says, I quote, "A school logo that was designed when Berea High School and Midpark High School merged in 2013 has been removed from the district's website over concerns that it resembles a white power symbol." Okay, first of all, it either is a white power symbol or it isn't. I don't care if it resembles it or not. If it's designed to be the white power symbol, again, was not aware that there is one. Maybe there is. I'm not aware of it. But it was designed to show white power, which it is not, as you'll hear in a minute, or it's just a fucking logo, okay? An art teacher in the district created the logo for Berea Midpark High School of a fist clenching a lightning bolt to represent the Titans. The superintendent, Tracy Wheeler, said he looked at mythology, he looked at the Titans, he looked at what other school districts had done with their Titan logo and their Titan mascot. 5 fingers were chosen to pay tribute to the 50-year rivalry between the high schools before the merger, and 5 groups uniting: students, teachers, administrators, support staff, parents, and community. The hand was then folded into a fist, according to the artist, because the fingers need to come together. Together, they are stronger than the individual part. That sounds like something pretty positive to me. I would be curious to know how many complaints were there about that logo before the riots and the protests. Wheeler said, "I know the concern wasn't so much the fist as the color of the fist." In the original logo, the fist was white, which concerned some staff members. That escalated following protests and racial tensions across the country. Ah, so Amateur Nation wasn't upset until it was told that it should be upset. Got it. Wheeler said, "We did have 5 of our staff members who are African-American reach out to me in various ways asking if it's time for the district to take a look at that. The logo was discussed at last week's Berea City School District Board of Education meeting. Board President Anna Chapman said the white power aspect had not occurred to members previously, but they agreed it needed to be addressed." Okay, that's rational. I'll buy that. Skipping ahead in the article, "New renderings of the logo were created and the artist is working on additional versions to present before the committee. The old logo was not only taken off the website, but it is being phased out in the district and no longer an option for uniforms and other items." Everyone feels safer now? Included? Happy? I'll repeat what I said last episode. Amateur Nation's problems are not the world's problems. By the way, I saw this post about this I saw this article in a post on Farcebook, and I commented with what I thought was an easy solution as someone who has, no joke, designed several company logos in my lifetime. You ready? change the fist to blue or green or whatever color a human being does not come in. Problem solved. Or here's an idea, the school's colors, right? These are two high schools that merged. Maybe blend those two colors together and see what you come up with. Problem solved, right? So here are some of the alternate logos. That's what I thought as soon as I saw this on Farcebook. And here are some of the alternate logos. Notice the third one from the left. Mm-hmm. Although I'm sure that will offend people with jaundice. Oh, by the way, but this logo? No problem there. Hmm. Aunt Jemima, Uncle Ben, logos under siege, just like major cities around the U.S. And speaking of the word siege, the definition of siege is, one, the act or process of surrounding and attacking a fortified place in such a way as to compel the surrender of the defenders, and two, any prolonged effort to overcome resistance. Sounds kind of like what's going on in Chicago and New York and Portland and Seattle and other similar cities, no? Okay. But to amateurs, apparently, change and siege mean the same thing. I had mentioned in a comment on Farcebook about Chicago being under siege. I mean, after all, just on July 4th weekend alone, 87 were shot, 17 killed in Chicago. Okay? Nope. One of my Facebook friends said, quote, "It's not siege, it's more about change." I guess those murder victims were changed to death. Make no mistake, Chicago is under siege. Now, during all this unrest, amateurs have loved throwing around the benign, vague word that always sounds positive, by the way. Everyone thinks the word change is always good. Change isn't always good. No, it's like if you have like a favorite food and your doctor says you got it, like I love chocolate chip cookies, and he says you got to stop eating chocolate chip cookies, you're going to die. That's change. That's not good change. Now, change sucks. I mean, I understand that's a very bizarre example there, but everyone thinks change by definition, especially in politics and social policy, is good just because it's change. No. But the amateurs love throwing around the word change when it comes up against anything negative. For example, murder, assault, fires, businesses burning down, civilians being killed, pollution, blight, you know, the things that are going on in the riots where cities are under siege. I guess technically World War II was about change, right? It was, technically. Speaking of change, if this is supposed to be about police change and how they deal with crime, quick sidebar. Hear me out. By definition, police, teachers, doctors, and let's say clergy are held to a higher standard, right? I think we'd all agree on that. How come when a teacher molests a student in an isolated incident, we don't defund all teachers? How come when a doctor molests a patient or commits an act of grievous malpractice and a patient dies, we don't shut down the entire medical system? How come when a priest molests a child, we don't shut down all churches? Because that would be dumb. That would be dumb. We rely on teachers, doctors, and clergies, members of the clergy, just like we rely on the police. What? Because police are made to protect, and when one isolated amateur commits a felonious assault or murder, that's what makes it more egregious? Teachers are here to teach and protect and mentor our children, right? And when that trust is destroyed, when it goes against everything that a teacher is about, why is there no outrage nationwide? Same with doctors, same with the clergy. Pick a profession where there's that level of trust. Lawyers, right? But there's that amateur mindset. The word change helps them justify bad behavior. In these cases, felonious crimes. And here's the key, especially when it doesn't affect them directly, like most things don't. It's about change more than siege, Lou. Keep telling yourself that. And it's easy to say when this person lives in California, away from the places where you're getting hit by stray bullets and shot. And make no mistake, I live in LA. I drive around all parts of LA. Brentwood, Malibu, Beverly Hills, nothing. Venice, destroyed. Destroyed. I don't want to get too far off topic here, but I went to go check out the sunset in Venice. I haven't been to Venice since visiting a friend of mine in March, right? And Venice has always been a little sketchy now and then, right? It seems to go through phases where it's like, well, they really cleaned it up. They got rid of the late night gang activity. They got rid of the trash on the ground. They cleaned up the beaches. They cleaned up the storefronts. They repainted things. And about every 4 years or so, and this is not anything to do with an election, right? It just seems like that's the cycle. Like every 4 years, and it starts to get dirty again, and they do a good job, put in new restrooms and showers, and they help out the homeless. And you see that. You've always seen the creative types, the singers, the dancers, the actors, the comedians, people juggling chainsaws, all that kind of stuff that makes Venice great. It's anything and everything. I've seen some crime there, nothing crazy, and I've seen a lot of beautiful stuff, some great artwork, some of which I own in my own home. I went to Venice Beach 2 days ago. I will never go back. Without hyperbole, I'm 5'9". I saw a mound of garbage taller than me that could easily fill 100 square feet room. And I saw a lot of that. Human feces everywhere. Dogs on leashes, whatever. I mean, you always had the occasional amateur who would let their dog go without having a leash. People are like, yeah, screw it. And I would always see police walking around making sure that, you know, people weren't getting a little out of hand. Zero. Women without tops, men without pants, walking around in their underwears, people clearly high and drinking. I got a whiskey right here. Drinking right out of liquor bottles. And when they're done, throw them. There are multi-million dollar homes right on that boardwalk, right on the bike path, right on the sand, right on the strand right there. And I'm watching people do drugs and shoot up and get high and throw up and go to the bathroom and just be gross. Picture that happening on your front doorstep. Because these houses, they don't have yards and lawns. They're right up against the bike path in the sand. And you've got people just taking over. The smells of urine, BO, garbage, dying animals. You know there's dead rats and mice in there. And here's the worst part. Some of those restaurants were still open with outdoor seating only. And you got people trying to gag down a meal just because it's outside. It's Venice and it's 72 degrees out and perfect. Trying to see a sunset. Inches away from 55-gallon barrels of garbage that were piled 5 feet above that had never been taken. So there's a coronavirus. There's a pandemic. So sanitation just ends. Look, I can understand why police are like leaving their jobs because they're fearing for their lives. Explain to me why the garbage men still aren't doing their jobs. It was appalling. I will never go back. And that is 17 miles from where I live. Venice is right between Santa Monica and Marina del Rey. Venice has multi-million dollar homes. Santa Monica and Marina del Rey have really expensive homes. And I feel bad for those people who have those real estate investments because unless something changes, no one's going to want to live there. Cars are vandalized. People are just sitting on other people's parked cars. It wasn't like Seattle or Portland. There was no violence going on, but you could just tell. It's just like, let them do what they want. And it's just a matter of time before. And that's here's my favorite part. You have to wear a mask, right, to get anywhere in Los Angeles. But you got people literally eating from here to this microphone next to garbage, old garbage, not just an outdoor trash can that hasn't been emptied yet, weeks worth of garbage. And they're outside eating. Those restaurants can stay open because they're eating outside. But and the people walking in get temperature checked, wear their mask, and now they can sit down. There's no way in hell I would eat anything in Venice. And that's a shame because I liked going down there. I didn't go there a lot. I'm not really a beach guy, but I would go to various beach communities depending on what I wanted to do. Sometimes I want to lay out. Sometimes I just want to throw a frisbee. Sometimes I want to watch a sunset, have a date, go eat at a nice restaurant. There's different beaches all up and down the West Coast here that are right for that. Sometimes you just want to be alone and think, Venice, I'm done. No way in hell. I've lived in California now 23 years. That genuinely made me sad. And I drove all the way home by myself and I just kept going, wow. Wow, I can't believe I saw that. Wow. Shameful. And that's going to make its way into California. But the other cities, believe me, Chicago, New York, Seattle, Portland, they got it way worse than we do. Way worse. Okay, let's get back on track. Sorry about that. going back to his point where he said it's more about change than siege, you know, not to mention that's inaccurate and false. We're just going to let innocent people get shot for the sake of change. Would that make you feel better if you lost your loved one, your friend, your family member? Some of these are babies, children, stray bullets. How did your son die? He was shot. What did he do? Nothing. We were walking and a stray bullet caught him, but it was for change, so it's okay. Disgusting. And by the way, one of the nominees for worst mayor ever, Mayor Lightfoot of Chicago said these quotes in response to the July 4th murders. And strap yourself in for some serious, concrete solutions on how we can end the siege and the violence in Chicago. You ready? And I quote, "Sorrow itself is not enough." Damn, I really thought feeling lousy was going to fix everything. Did you really just say those words? "And what it says is we need to do better as a city." She says, "We need to do better as a city this day, this year, and really every day." Oh, okay, I thought I could take weekends off to commit murder and random acts of violence. She says, "There is no reason we should be feeling and experience moments like this." Yeah, there is. You let it happen. You tell police to stand down. You don't support the people paid to protect the innocent and arrest the amateurs. You don't allow the police that are paid by the taxpayers to do their jobs. And you have been running a city that has been plagued by violence, particularly black-on-black violence, for decades. And I like how we as a city need to do better. The people not shooting innocent civilians already did their part, right? They woke up, all right, what do I need to do today? Okay, not shoot people. Done. Check that off. Here comes some more brilliance. She says, quote, 87 people shot is never acceptable. Finally. But then she trumped it by saying 87 people shot in a week or a month is not acceptable. Oh, so what, 87 in a quarter is? I always love how everyone gets pissy about elected officials, whether they're a mayor, a city councilman, a president, a vice president, whatever. You know, bad public speaker. Look, that's not what they're trained to do. Look, we get lucky when we have any elected official on any level that's a good public speaker. I've been public speaking literally since I was 5. Gave my first speech when I was 6 years old in church. Addicted, loved it. And I may not even be everyone's cup of tea when it comes to public speaking, but I know what the hell I'm doing. I know how to prepare. I know how to write. I know how to edit. I know how to rehearse. I know how to deliver. This is the mayor of the third largest city in the United States. And that's her quote. It's not like she didn't have time to put something together. It's not like she doesn't have speechwriters at her disposal. But she says 87 people shot in a week or even a month is not acceptable. All right, so how about a year? Well, that's fine. I mean, it's a year. Come on. She is hard ass on crime. Look, she had it right in the beginning. 87 people shot is never acceptable. Stop right there. You were good. But I guess 87 shot in a year, well, you'll have that. All right, more knee-jerk reactions from amateurs. Now, maybe you've heard the Washington Redskins change their name, albeit temporarily, to the Washington Football Team. Catchy. Who do you, are you a football player? Yeah, what are you? I'm a Packer. What about you? I'm a Bear. What about you? I'm a Lion. What about you? I'm a football team. That's Ralph Wiggum, right? I'm a football team. Catchy. All right, now, despite the fact that for the second time, Native Americans were surveyed by the team and asked if they found the name Redskins offensive as of August 9th, 2019, 90% said, no, it's not offensive. I'm sure, of course, that has now changed since Amateur Nation has been alerted to be offended. And an Instagram friend of mine posted this knee-jerk reaction virtue signal. You ready? Change it to the Washington Kneelers, and I'll buy season tickets for my family and everybody on my block. Mm-hmm. What bravery, what fortitude, what humanity, what a load of crap. First of all, the cheapest Redskin ticket for the season pass, by the way, $759. One ticket. And those are the nosebleed seats. So you got a family of four, $3,036. Plus tax, parking, got to get some food each game, right? Oh, and don't forget about everyone on your block. Why stop there? Buy tickets for the whole city since you're writing imaginary checks. And you're going to go to season, you're going to be a season ticket holder for the Washington Redskins living in California. That's where this person's post originated from. Now, look, while I get that that person's Instagram post was an exaggeration, and the point is virtue signaling, backed with a 0% chance that the team will call itself the Washington Kneelers, and B, that the amateur would actually follow through with his or her promise. And also, my question is, how are you paying for these tickets? With the money you're not making during the shutdown? Yeah, shameful. Way to signal that virtue, okay? Look at how generous I would be in a hypothetical situation that will never happen. No thought goes into posts like that. It's knee-jerk reactions and all emotion without thinking about the reality. Where was all this fervor about the name of the Washington Redskins since they've been around since 1932? Look, I get it. We all make emotional statements like that now and then. I'm an emotional guy. I got a short fuse. I work on my temper every single day, and I'm light years better now than I was years ago. But considering the subject matter, the knee-jerk reaction, and the opportunity to virtue signal, it's amateur. Topic number two. Professional athletes need to check themselves. Of course, everyone in America has the right to peacefully speak their minds. I will not censor. I don't believe in censorship, but professional athletes, you better come heavy with some common sense because you're getting called out. Now, disclaimer, I'm not a religious man, but I respect everyone's religious choices, and I absolutely believe in the freedom of religion, as long as it's not hurting anybody. But this topic, this news story from themix.net. Bubba Wallace mocks fellow NASCAR driver's Christianity during temper tantrum over loss. Bubba Wallace, the NASCAR driver who infamously falsely claimed that a noose had been placed in his garage a few weeks ago, just showed the world what a sore loser he really is once again. He mocked the Christian faith of the driver who sent him into the wall in a recent qualifying race. Yahoo Sports reported that Wallace was sent crashing out of last week's All-Star Race qualifier by fellow driver Michael McDowell. Wallace does not get to race for the $1 million prize. Afterward, Wallace went this classless route of being a sore loser by leaving the bumper of his wrecked vehicle in front of McDowell's door. Wallace only doubled down from there, sinking so low as to mock McDowell's Christian faith, something that had nothing to do with the race whatsoever. Wallace said of McDowell, "People say he's one of the nicest guys in the garage. Can't wait for the God-fearing text that he's going to send me about preaching and praise and respect. What a joke he is." Yeah, praise and respect. What a joke that is. Don't you hate that in sports? Hey, Bubba Smollett, time to bust out the mirror. Seriously, what does McDowell's religious beliefs have to do with anything NASCAR? That. Making the most of this situation, McDowell has decided to try to use it to benefit a good cause. He's going to auction off the bumper that Wallace left for him. The proceeds will go to Motor Racing Outreach, a charitable organization that ministers to those in the racing community. Now, I'm reticent to say athletes and all celebrities need to keep their opinions to themselves. That would be wrong, right? Because they have a right to their opinions. They're humans. They have thoughts and feelings and opinions. Of course, this show is not about censorship. But when I see The Rock, who I generally like in movies, on a commercial saying, you know, with that eyebrow, "We're all going through a hard time now. Look how serious I'm talking." Somehow I'm thinking, Rock, you're doing all right. And I'm not saying that maybe he doesn't have a friend or family member lost to the coronavirus. I'm not unfeeling. And I'm also not saying that just because you have money, that cures all your problems. Certainly helps. I'd like a little bit extra right now. I think we all would. But you know how that works. You know how that works. You're at home, right? You're not earning money like you used to. You might be working from home. Maybe you're one of the few that's like, "I'm making the same money and I'm working from home." Good luck. I'm good for you, but that's rare. If you're working from home, you're probably making less money or fewer hours, or you're just not being as effective, whatever. But you're at home, you're watching TV, you're not making money like you used to. You haven't gotten a goddamn maskless day since March. You're fed up. You're out of shape. You're antsy. You're sick of your spouse or your kids because they're getting on your nerves. You just feel off, which is totally understandable. And then the celebrity who is perfectly coiffed, ripped personal trainer, who still is shooting the commercial, makeup person, wearing a mask, camera guy, director, whatever, who has more money than you'll ever have, who doesn't even know you, tells you that, I get you. Celebs and athletes, you really want to help? Donate money to rebuild the cities that are being destroyed, under siege. Often by the very people that you celebrities donated money to help destroy those cities and stay away from your estates and mansions. That's a fact, Jack. And here's the kicker. If you're going to do that, celebrities and athletes, do it without any fanfare, anonymously. I know. What? I won't get any likes or followers. I won't get any press. Look, pro athletes work hard. I've interviewed a few when I was on the radio. I've done personal appearances with members of the Cleveland Browns and the Cleveland Indians and singers and actors and stuff. Hundreds of interviews. Okay? They work hard. They stay disciplined. Many came from abject poverty, whether in the United States or another country. Many athletes have a short shelf life. They just do. But let me get this straight. The elite athletes, some who make more in a month than many people do literally in a lifetime. Can you imagine that? Some of these guys make more in a month than some people do in a lifetime. These athletes are going to take a knee and disrespect the very country that gave them the opportunity. Not the right, the opportunity, the privilege, there's a word everyone loves, to not only have one of the most lucrative jobs in the world, but one of the most elite jobs in the world. NFL, NBA, MLB, you're all boycotted. I'm done. Don't tell me that it's about change, that you're doing this because you care, okay? You're doing it to stay on the side of cancel culture, of the woke amateurs who, frankly, for the most part, don't even go to your games or watch your sport. Sorry, they don't. And while I love all things cars and racing, NASCAR, that's strike two. You shit on disabled cops and cops who were injured in the line of duty when they were invited to be there? Know your audience. Do you think it's the woke millennials who could afford your inflated ticket prices and your $12 hot dogs and $15 beers? Think again. Frankly, I'm a proud American, but I never liked the idea of having the national anthem before any sporting event. Those are separate entities. Just my opinion. And I'm not even saying get rid of the national anthem. I'm not. Let me be clear. I like the national anthem. I didn't say I didn't like the national anthem. I didn't say I didn't like it at sporting events. I just don't see, like, why is this happening? That'd be like playing the national anthem before your wedding. What has this got to do with anything? But I get it. It's a big spectacle, right? And I guess because you got 50, 60, 100,000 plus in a stadium somewhere watching a sporting event. Oh, I don't know. America, the government thought, hey, I'd like to think most of these people at least like us. We're flawed, but, you know, hey, let's do a flyby and play the national anthem. Okay? Look, I'm not saying get rid of the national anthem. Of course, I'm not saying that. I like it. I don't understand why it's there, but I don't see the logic behind it. And here's, strap yourself in. It's possible to not like something, but still be okay with it, you know? It is possible. You can like something. I'm sorry, you can not like something and still be okay with it. My life isn't ruined because they play the national anthem. And when I'm at a sporting event, you can bet your ass I stand up, hand to my heart, hat off. Of course, it's called respect. And I always say in the show, respect is earned. That respect, taking your hat off, hand on your heart, when the national anthem plays. What do you think that's for in general? In my mind, for me, it's for every man and woman who gave their lives, their Christmases, their times away from their families to serve this country so I can go to that stupid game. It's implied that if you're working in America, you respect the country that gives you that privilege and freedom. But we do have a national anthem at sporting events in sports, so do the right thing, athletes. Show some appreciation. Think of the disabled and amputee veterans who have brought these very teams have brought out onto fields and basketball courts and baseball fields and football fields to salute, that literally gave up their lives and their limbs, their Christmases, their family time to protect the United States. So you can throw a ball through a hoop or kick a ball through a field goal or hit a ball over a fence. I'm not diminishing the skill, the grace, the athleticism, and the work ethic that these athletes have. But now, Three of the four big sports have really shown what they're about. They're about the athletes and their paychecks and their beliefs, not the fans that pay the ticket prices, the season tickets, that buy the jerseys, and the expensive parking and the food. And it's a shame because, you know, there are plenty of athletes who don't agree with this grandstanding and virtue signaling. You know, there's plenty of them, but they still caved. They still knelt. Why? Well, sadly, for the same reason us regular people will continue to wear masks at bars and restaurants and gyms. They want to have some semblance of normalcy. And they also want to go to work and make enough money so they can survive and provide for their families. Yeah, they're rich. It's just problems on a different scale for these athletes. More money, more problems, but they still have to work, and they want to be there. I'm an entertainer. I miss being on stage. I miss auditioning. I miss performing. I miss TV hosting. Without this podcast, I would be pretty hard to deal with. It's in my blood. Entertainers need to entertain. Singing, dancing, acting, comedy, pick one. Athletes need to do their sport. I'm not saying they're dumb jocks. I'm saying this like, I work so hard. I got my body right. My mind is right. I'm ready to go, and they can't do it. I get that. When will the pros rise up and not bow down to cancel culture, the socialism, the communism, and terrorism-run Black Lives Matter movement, and other sponsor pressure? Talked about last week how Nike wants to drop the hammer on the Washington Redskins, yet Nike's on a lot of uniforms, and Nike's in one of the top 10 countries that is run by Chinese slave labor. Hello, pot. I'm the kettle. You're black. Did I say that right? You know what I mean. Took me a second. I've only had 3 sips of whiskey. You know what I meant. People vote for politicians, okay? People use products and services. People vote for politicians. People use products and services. If you're going to show that you were catering to one specific audience and ignoring the loyal majority that have kept your lights on, we will leave. I know I will. I have. I haven't watched football in 3 years. That was long before all this crap happened. I've been keeping a detailed list of companies that virtue signal and play favorites. Well, Lou, they're speaking, I like this face. Well, Lou, they're speaking on behalf of the poor and those who can't stand up for themselves. Look, yeah, and I'm sure the poor feel way better. Keep telling yourself that. Instead of the wealthy athletes speaking up for the poor, how about meeting with the poor? And yes, there are some real salt-of-the-earth athletes out there that do genuine, tangible good, right? I don't see the wealthy athletes donating to poor people who don't have the financial means to take companies and people to court who have wronged them due to racism or prejudice or discrimination. You would think with the billions of dollars floating around the professional athlete world, their donations would make a clear difference. And of course, there are athletes in all sports who walk the walk and donate to causes because they believe in them. And they actually spend their time with those causes. That does exist, right? But I have yet to hear any civilian say these words. I would not have won my case against blank company until blank professional athlete and his or her blank organization fund helped me fight my case in court to stand up against the oppression that I experienced. Instead, who keeps buying jerseys with athletes' names on them that they'll never meet or have a relationship with? Sports fans, and often, sadly, poor sports fans. You ever notice that the most adamant sports fans are the ones who just simply can't afford to go to one game their entire life? That's sad. I respect the loyalty, but that's sad. But of course, it's the wealthiest. I'm not saying that, you know, you see Jack Nicholson on the court side at a Laker game that he's not a fan. He's definitely a diehard fan. But you know what I'm saying here. Sports fans. Usually the poor sports fans are the ones supporting these athletes. And they'll just keep coming back more and more for more abuse while getting the finger from the athletes. Look, I miss sports. Not that much. Mm-mm. You want to put up with a boyfriend or a girlfriend or a spouse that shit on your every core belief, would you? One that has flagrant, outright disdain for you and everything you believe in? So why would you put up with that from someone you've never met and never will meet? Fuck these amateurs. Topic number 3. I saved my favorite topic for, look at the smile on my face. I saved my favorite topic for last, and I gotta tell you, I laughed hard throughout the day for 2 days after I heard and read this story. And thus, we have a nominee for Amateur of the Year. Okay. From the mayor who brought you the hit comedy, How I Murdered Your Mother, and the nursing home disaster that was New York, this headline from the New York Post. Bars restricted from selling chips with booze to get around Cuomo rule. The article says this will really put a chip on New York bar owners' shoulders. Governor Andrew Cuomo has made it even harder for cash-strapped watering holes in restaurants to churn back to life by declaring that a bag of chips is no longer enough to comply with the requirement that they serve food with booze. The state liquor authority reversed course with that revised edict posted late Tuesday, which requires that they sell more substantial food with alcoholic drinks to be in compliance with the recent executive order. Cuomo last Thursday issued that rule, as well as a statewide ban on walk-up bar service as part of his crackdown on violations of social distancing rules. According to the new SLA guidance, a bag of chips or nuts does not meet the food requirement, but, quote, sandwiches, soups, or other foods, whether fresh, processed, pre-cooked, or frozen, do pass muster. Other foods, according to the SLA, are foods which are similar in quality and substance to sandwiches and soups. For example, salads, wings, or hot dogs would be of that quality and substance. However, the guidance says a bag of chips, bowl of nuts, or candy alone are not. Candy? Yeah, could I get your 18-year Redbreast whiskey on the rocks and a bag of Skittles? All right. Oh, there's more coming. That updated guidance appears to be in response to a clever upstate bar owner who added a $1 serving of Cuomo chips to every initial drink order. They were like potato chips, right? The new rule actually contradicts what a Cuomo official said Friday about the chips, telling the Post that would comply with the food requirement. Okay? That's not the only news source. This one's from NBCNewYork.com. The article says, desserts do count as those other foods, but only if they're a piece of cake slash pie. An ice cream sundae, etc. It should not be only a drink with whipped cream, a cookie, a piece of candy. What's with the fucking candy in this? And another article from Reason.com. Oh my God, I love this so much. Andrew Cuomo to chicken wings. You're not real food. Someone get Buffalo Wild Wings and Wingstop on the phone. They might have a problem with that. My head is spinning with all the science that is behind this related to the coronavirus. As always, of course, my fellow pros, get it. These comments from pros on social media following the story, and I quote, now COVID is avoiding full meals and only attacking people eating appetizers? Oh, Jesus. So restaurants that specialize in chicken wings should know that they aren't restaurants because they are an appetizer specialty store. You can't possibly get full eating 10 wings, right? Who goes to a bar to eat soup? Power trip in progress. Here's another quote from a pro listener. God, my cheeks hurt. I'm going to laugh all day now thinking about this. Does food make the virus go away or doesn't affect people as much instead of just drinking alcohol? COVID knows the difference between food and alcohol, just like it knows the difference between big box stores and small businesses. Amen. I like this one. If I ask to have my sandwich with no bread, does that count? Because once in a while, I cut carbs out of my diet. Also, am I allowed to split a sandwich or do I have to order a whole one for myself? I just don't want to break the law. Oh, my God. Oh my God, do I love pros and logic and common sense. I find logic and common sense comforting. I really do. Right wing, left wing. But the real question is, are you a wingist? When will we stop wingism? I just picture someone in the hospital stricken, sadly, with the coronavirus. Quick, we need breadsticks, stat. Damn it, man, we don't have time. This man needs a salad. By the way, this episode is brought to you by Chunky Soup. Chunky Soup. The soup that eats like a meal. All right, some serious questions. No, they're not. What's more absurd? Anyone, let alone a governor, let alone the governor of the largest city in the United States and up for debate, possibly the world, telling you what a meal is. Or holding a press conference to tell the world what a meal is, or the fact that anyone, let alone a governor, is telling you what a meal is, and somehow that's connected to the coronavirus. If there was ever any greater proof that this whole shutdown shit is about control and destroying American small businesses, this is it. But I'm sure more stupidity is coming. This whole thing reminds me of that episode of Seinfeld where Jerry takes out Kenny Banya. Kenny Banya gives Jerry an Armani suit and he doesn't want anything for it. He goes, yeah, well, you know what? Take me out for dinner. Take out for a meal. And Jerry's already reticent about doing that. But he takes him out for a meal. Kenny Banya wants to go out to Mendy's, this great place, Mendy's. Fancy restaurant. Jerry orders a fancy meal. Banya just orders the soup and says, oh, I'll save the meal for another time. And Jerry says, no, no, no. This is the meal. We're here now. Get whatever you want, but this is the meal. It's the act of sitting down, you know. This whole shit is beyond ludicrous. This has zero to do with the coronavirus or infections and everything about destroying American businesses, small American businesses, mom and pop shops, restaurants, bars, stores. And if you can't see that, please leave the country because we don't need you. We don't. There's lots of communist countries out there that you can go to where you don't have to do any thinking because they'll do it for you. I'm being serious here. We've officially jumped the shark. All right, time now for quickies. I saw some company offering, and I quote, antimicrobial car protection. When you buy a new car, antimicrobial car protection. If you are afraid of microbes, you have no business being behind the wheel of a car. That's the fact. You're afraid of microbes, but you're not afraid of a two-ton piece of machinery that can go 150 miles an hour? You're an amateur. I found a way to get the economy back on track, by the way, and this would actually work if there was a way to enforce it. It would happen overnight. A dollar tax on every virtue signaling post on social media. Overnight. Problem solved. Problem solved. But there's no way to do it. But, I mean, look, considering how Facebook and all the other social media pages and Amazon and everything else tracks our every movement, literally, every movement, every purchase, all that jazz. Considering how that's doable, you can't tell me if you post a virtue signal, you couldn't tax that. Well, how would you know what a virtue signal is, Lou? We all know what a virtue signal is. We all know. And if you don't, fine. Set up a committee. I volunteer to be CEO of that. And by the way, I posted that comment, albeit a joke, on Farcebook. And someone, of course, commented, and I quote, commenting on virtue signaling is a form of virtue signaling. No, it is not. Not in the least. What? Because you type that? That makes that so? Nice try. So I guess commenting on racism is a form of racism. Commenting on physical fitness is a form of physical fitness. So I guess we're just a country that doesn't have education anymore. We're not doing that anymore. Education from home. Watch TV, read a book, go online. That's education now. Here's some more mask lore for you. I'm going to make sure I read this exactly right. Until you have an anti-protesting mandate, which I would not support, by the way, but hear me out. Until you have an anti-protesting mandate, the same way you can't have restaurants at full capacity, the same way we can't go to beaches and churches, none of these mask myths hold any weight. You don't win the argument by saying, well, protests are more important than going to a restaurant and getting a haircut. And, well, one's a necessity and one is not. Uh-uh. Nice try. If you want to protest, do it on social media. Do it via Zoom. You do everything else on Zoom, you amateurs. Bottom line, protests are a group of people, a large group, whether indoors or outdoors. The virus does not know the reason for the gathering. So until protesting is outlawed, I ain't wearing a mask except the places where I have to, the grocery store. And other, if I popped into my hardware store today, had to pick up some stuff. I wore the mask, got my thing, I was out. I'm out there in 2 seconds, I'm not hanging out there. That's it. And look, if I was visiting a sick relative or a relative at a nursing home, of course I would. But that's it. If the mask necessity was that serious, you wouldn't allow people to be in any types of groups, inside or outside, regardless of the reason. And that includes protest. Now, to be clear, this isn't about not allowing protesters to peacefully assemble. It's pointing out the hypocrisy and outright lack of common sense and, frankly, reckless behavior of allowing protests and riots to continue, thus probably spreading the virus more while we all get punished and get to be grounded again. These illogical mandates are nothing but a maneuver to overthrow our government, regardless of who you vote for. It is a movement to overthrow American democracy. Time now for three pro things. Three things that are done right. Number one. Six Days. Movie I found on Netflix. I love true stories. And as I've mentioned, I've been on the action movie kick as of late, and I ran across this tense thriller. Now, here's a quick synopsis. In April 19... You know, I guess I forgot about this. I must have been little or just forgot about this incident, but... it says, in April 1980, gunmen stormed the Iranian embassy in London. Highly trained SAS operatives prepare a counterattack, hoping to end the hostage situation in one swift blow. It was a true story, so I'm already in, and you really don't know. I mean, I didn't know. I just somehow this incident eluded me historically, so I was fascinated to see how it would actually turn out. And I was wrong in a lot of stuff. Great movie, though. Well acted. Number two. This nine banded small batch whiskey. I'm drinking it right now. It's a 3-year whiskey. It's 90 proof. It comes from Austin, Texas. And I guess the best way to describe it for me, I'm not giving you reading, you know, the earth tones of nut and leather. No, it's a little bit more substantial and heavier in weight. It's not like it's not as watery as other whiskeys. I'm not saying it's thick and like a gel, but it's good. Hang on. Recommended. Number three. Now, I just talked about how pro athletes need to check themselves, and this third pro thing was added an hour before this episode was recorded. The Atlanta Braves, and this hurts me to have them as a pro thing after the Braves broke my heart in the 1995 World Series against my Cleveland Indians in 4-2, but theblaze.com reports from ESPN that the Braves sent an email to season ticket holders saying that while the team is looking at the future of the tomahawk chop, I'm looking at you, Florida Seminoles, the forearm forward motion with a wordless stereotypical Native American chant employed during games, the team is sticking with the name. Common sense. I remember seeing that years ago. I'm like, that's not a nice thing. That's pretty racist. But I would like to think, I could be wrong here, I would like to think that most people that are doing the tomahawk chop, whether you're a Florida Seminoles fan in college football or the Atlanta Braves, you're not doing it because you hate American Indians or Native Americans. You're doing it because you're fired up for your team. But I get it. Not to mention, let's say they say, hey, no more tomahawk chop. Okay, great. How are you going to enforce that? I mean, I guess the best you could do is if someone does that at a game, you got to go. But the Braves are sticking with their name. And the article says in the letter, the team said that it has commenced a relationship with Native American leaders and that through our conversations, what, they didn't burn something? They didn't destroy something? How dare you? That's pro-nation right there, kids. And that through our conversations, changing the name of the Braves is not under consideration or deemed necessary. We have great respect and reverence for our name and the Native American communities that have held meaningful relationships with us do as well. We will always be the Atlanta Braves. Finally, I have a reason to like the Braves. All right, this was our first show. Well, a little bit over an hour here. Please subscribe to my YouTube page where you can see previews for future episodes and past ones. If you're seeing this show for the first time, you can go back and cherry pick. I do a very detailed description of what the topics are and maybe a certain things hit your interest there. You know, you can look at some other parody songs that I've done, some of my comedy, whatever. Just go to my YouTube page. This show is heard on 14 podcast platforms, and it's not just a podcast, it's a movement. So go to Amazon, please download my book for under $5, Amateur Nation, The Decline of Common Sense, Manners, and Social Skills, and you can go email me, lou@lousantini.com, or check out my website, lousantini.com. You can check out all the performance dates that I don't have because everything's shut down. Anyway, you can also find my social media on Twitter and Instagram on there as well. Remember, amateurs, we see you. You're not at home. Don't do life wrong. Go pro. Don't be an amateur. For Amateur Nation, I'm Lou Santini, and this has been a Big Major production.
Thanks, Lou. We'll see you next week.